Our reading today is from the 10th Psalm. Let us listen for the word of God. Why, O Lord, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? Hear what the Spirit is saying.
Life is lived in seasons and times. We do not live in eternity in this world, in this lifetime. We have a limited time on earth. We live in only one season of history. And we don't get to pick it. We don't get to pick the seasons in which we live our one life. Our individual lives also have seasons across the lifespan. There's a season of childhood and a season of youth and young adulthood and older adulthood. We have different tasks and different experiences and different needs and different possibilities in every season of our lifespan. I think we have also emotional seasons. At least for me, there are seasons when for days, weeks, even months, I am pretty much in a good mood almost every day and have good energy and I'm encouraged. And then there are seasons, emotional seasons, when I am not so energetic and when I am not so encouraged. And these seasons do not necessarily seem to correspond to what's going on in the world around me or what's happening to me. I can have negative things happening to me and still be in an emotionally encouraged season. They do not seem to be shaped solely by external events. I think that there are also spiritual seasons. Seasons of spiritual insight where, we're aware of God moving in the world and we have new thoughts and new ideas and new feelings spiritually almost every day. And then there are seasons of spiritual dullness where we seem to have no spiritual creativity or aliveness. There are seasons of spiritual connection with other people and seasons of spiritual loneliness. There are seasons when God seems near and intimate, and seasons when God seems distant or absent. One of the spiritual seasons of life that mystics and other spiritual people have often spoken about is what St. John of the Cross in the 16th century called the dark night of the soul. The modern writer Bruce Damaris calls it the season of painful spiritual disorientation. The church historian and theologian Martin Marty called it the winter of the heart. Mystics and other spiritual people describe this season as a season of the experience of the absence of God, the absence of religious or spiritual feelings, the absence of a sense of connection to the transcendent that connects us with the past and the future, that connects us with people in other geographies and other places and gives us a sense of continuity in our lives. Martin Marty, during the winter of his heart, when he could not experience a sense of God, prayed prayers that began like this: Why, O Hidden One? Why, O Silence? Why, O Absence? During that season of his life, his names for God became Hidden One, Silence, Absence. In one prayer he prayed, Why, O absence, when the cry is most intense is the silence most stunning? Because some of us have experienced winters of the heart, dark nights of the soul, seasons of divine absence. And because some of us will experience them in our lifetime, I want to say three things about this particular season of the soul. First, it is an experience, a season as old as humanity itself. I don't think it is universal because I've talked to people who have felt a quiet presence of God in their life, throughout their life. So I don't believe the experience of the absence of God is universal, but it is common. It can be brought on by experiences like intense grief or illness or a broken relationship or the experience of violence. Or it can come without any identifiable external cause, no discernible reason. It's possible to just wake up one day with a sense that God is gone. The experience is described frequently in the Bible. It is common in the Psalms. I picked for the scripture today a psalm I find poignant, Psalm 10. Why, O Lord, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? Why is it that when I need you the most, you so often seem not to be there at all? Psalm 22 says, my God, I cry out by day, but you do not answer. By night, but I find no rest. Psalm 77, will the Lord reject forever? Will the Lord never show favor again? Has the Lord's unfailing love vanished forever? Psalm 88, you have put me in the lowest pit, in the darkest depths. Why, Lord, do you reject me and hide your face from me? The short story in the Bible called the Book of Job includes intense descriptions of the experience of the absence of God. One of the most difficult books in the Bible, which preachers and biblical scholars have mostly tried to ignore, is the Book of Lamentations, which includes such stark descriptions of the experience of God turning God's back, seemingly on us, that it's almost too difficult to bear to read. And we remember that Jesus himself on the cross is quoted as praying the opening words of Psalm 22, my God, why have you forsaken me? We've tried every way that we could come up with to make that sound like something different from what it actually says. But apparently Jesus himself experienced the absence of God on the cross. The experience of the winter of the heart, the dark night of the soul, is not a sin. This experience is not a sin. It is part of the faith experience. It is biblical. It is Christ-like. It is okay. It is not a sign that there is something wrong with you as a person of faith or as a Christian. It's nothing to feel guilty about. It's nothing to be ashamed of. It is common and normal. It is part of the spiritual journey. When we experience it, we are in good company. So that's the first affirmation I want to make. It's not something to feel guilty about. The second thing I want to say about the winter of the heart is that it is not the same thing as depression. The writer who is most helpful at understanding this is the late psychiatrist Gerald May, who for many years was a director of the Shalom Institute for Spiritual Formation, which is located right here in the Washington area. He wrote a book some years before his death entitled The Dark Night of the Soul. And he talked about it as both a psychiatrist and as a person who had devoted much of his life to the pursuit of spiritual awareness. And he said that the difference between a dark night of the soul and depression is that during a dark night of the soul, a person tends not to lose their sense of humor. They tend not to lose their general effectiveness in life, and they tend not to stop being compassionate toward others. Dark night of the soul tends not to take those things away as depression sometimes can. Dr. May said that when he worked with people experiencing a dark night of the soul, he did not experience the kind of negativity and resentment that depression can often cause. But, he said, a dark night of the soul and depression can often overlap. The dark night experience can bring on depression, or, he says, an experience of depression can bring on a dark night experience just as any other illness can. And what Dr. May said was the most important thing here is that depression should be treated whether it includes a dark night experience or not. Depression is treatable. In fact, Dr. May said that some people came to him and said, I'm depressed, I'm having a dark night of the soul, but I don't want to interfere with what God is doing in my life in the dark night of the soul, so I don't want to work on my depression. Dr. May said that it is a crime to allow depression to go untreated. And he also said that he was fully convinced that if God is working in your life, God is able to continue working in your life even if you're taking medicine. That medicine isn't stronger than the Spirit of God in our life. So that when we experience symptoms of depression such as persistent sadness or anxiety or guilt or feelings of worthlessness, sleeplessness or oversleeping or thoughts of death or suicide, we ought to go to a doctor to have our depression treated. Chemicals will not interfere with our spiritual path. Dr. May quoted the Buddhist teacher Judith Hopper, who talked to a lot of practitioners of Buddhist meditation. Buddhists also have an experience like the winter of the heart or the dark night of the soul. And she talked to practitioners of Buddhist meditation and doctors about depression. And her conclusion was this. She advised, before enlightenment, take Prozac and talk to your shrink. After enlightenment, take Prozac and talk to your shrink. Meditation is immensely helpful, so is medicine. The winter of the heart and clinical depression may overlap, but they are not the same thing. If you are depressed, see your doctor. The winter of the heart is normal. It is not anti-spiritual. It's not the same thing as depression, but they may overlap. And the third thing I want to say about this particular spiritual season is that while it tends to feel unspiritual, anti-spiritual, it is spiritual. In fact, the winter of the heart can be the most powerful experience, spiritual experience, that any of us could have. It is just spiritual in a different way. Perhaps the most famous person who is a contemporary of some of us, at least, who has testified to her experience of the winter of the heart is Mother Teresa of Calcutta. When she died, her letters to her confessor and to others were published, and they testified to long periods of her adult life in which she experienced the total absence of God in her life. In fact, this was the predominant religious experience of her adult life. One of her biographers says that for over 50 years of her life, Mother Teresa, quote, felt no presence of God whatsoever, neither in her heart nor in the Eucharist. For over 50 years, Mother Teresa felt no presence of God either in her heart or in the Eucharist. What did she make of this? How did she understand it? This is what she wrote. She wrote, "I have come to love the darkness, for I believe now that it is a part of a very, very small part of Jesus' darkness and pain on earth. Unbelief, the winter of the heart, may feel unspiritual. It is actually very spiritual." Sometimes we can confuse religious feelings with the actual presence of God. I know I talk from time to time that for me in worship, the most important thing anymore, as important as I think teaching is, as important I think times of prayer are, as much as I love music in worship, for me anymore, the most important thing is the sense of presence of the divine. But sometimes we can confuse that kind of experience with the actual presence of God. Sometimes we can make spiritual feelings or spiritual experiences into idols, worshiping our own feelings and our own experiences rather than the God who transcends our own experience. We can come to think that our experience of God is actually God. St. John of the Cross wrote, "Delightful feelings do not themselves lead the soul to God, but rather cause it to become attached to delightful feelings." Bruce Damerisk writes, "Seasons of God's hiddenness call saints to follow Jesus at all cost, regardless of the blessings we do or do not experience." Mother Teresa believed darkness intensified her compassion for the poor. She believed it helped her to identify with those who experienced hard things in this life. She came to believe that spiritual darkness was essential to her vocation. She came to believe that the experience of unbelief allowed her to enter into Christ's experience on the cross. The winter of the heart may not feel spiritual. It may be very, very spiritual. It may be the most spiritual season of all. I want to say one more thing this morning, and it's something I've said before, but I need to say it again. One of my teachers, one of my greatest teachers, Edmund Stimley, experienced a god-awful Easter. His wife of many, many years, the Saturday before Easter, the day before Easter, told him in the morning that she was not feeling well. Before midnight of that day, she had died. Ed went to church the next morning. He had literally spent every Easter Sunday of his life in church and almost every other Sunday. So he went to church. He went to Easter service. As the congregation was singing, "Christ the Lord is risen today," he suddenly realized that he could not sing the Alleluias. He said the Alleluias literally stuck in his throat, and as hard as he tried, he could not get them to come out. As he was working and trying to sing, he said he suddenly realized that he didn't need to sing the Alleluias that Sunday, that the rest of the congregation would sing them for him. He said he suddenly realized that he didn't have to believe that Easter Sunday because the rest of the congregation would believe for him. I've come to the conviction that the basic unit of faith is not the person. The basic unit of faith is not the individual. The basic unit of faith is the congregation. On Sundays, when I have no faith, I know that others in the congregation, if I just come and be with them, will have faith for me. I don't need to have faith every Sunday. I don't need to have faith every day because I'm part of a congregation where when I'm in a winter of my heart, other people will have faith for me. I know people who are part of this congregation who have never experienced a strong sense of faith ever in their life, ever in their life. But they come here and they are part of this congregation because they know that others of you in this congregation will have faith for them. The faith of the congregation carries those of us for whom faith is impossible on any given day or even any given lifetime. So for those of us going through seasons, winters of the heart, dark nights of the soul, it is especially important that we stay connected, that we continue to be part of the congregation where others, when we can't believe, will believe for us. Dark nights, winters, they can be the most important seasons of our lives, the most powerful seasons, spiritual seasons, the most powerful spiritual seasons of our lives.